welcome.
Oh yeah.
What's up, homies?
The homies.
Woo!
How you living, player? Oh my god. Remember when people used to talk like that in the 90s?
I think some people still do, man.
I was just going to say that. I heard people say that recently. I mean, some people are still.
They mostly look like Jamie Kennedy, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
the whole wigger face. What was that? I was just talking.
So close, dude, Matt. So close, dude.
I mean, dude, like I was just talking to Liz about that. I was like, man, some guys don't grow out of it. You know, they're still wearing like the backwards hat and the baggy pants and shit like that.
Jenga
jeans. Like, yeah, and they're still like they're like 50 years old and shit.
Dude, you know,
that's like half of our listeners, all right?
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. You know, JNCOs are still like they're making a comeback.
Bro, hell yeah. At the indoor swap meet all day, bro.
Somebody told me that. They're like, dude, JNCOs are making a comeback. I was like, they never left, bro. JNCOs for life, IS shorts. Man. My 50-inch fucking pants, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Damn. I've been to a rave or two.
Cats and boots.
What's up, Matt? Sexy fucking.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going, man.
Finally got my mic working on the phone. Too bad it uses the exact port I need to charge it. It's kind of
just eating all that battery.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
One day it's gonna be better again. You're gonna be back to normal, and it's gonna be even better. It's all good.
Oh yeah,
man.
Definitely. This is just a temporary solution, ladies and gentlemen. Temporary.
The full Voltron will be assembled.
There you go. There you go.
Yes, sir.
Damn, I feel like it's been a minute, but then I realized that it has been a minute. So
this is about right. Sure. No shit. No shit.
Which is our friends at home don't know because they get content every week, but we have so much in the can that we can afford to skip a week or two or three. But
it was really cool to hear the interview that you got a chance to catch up with Joe Castro, though.
That was kind of on the fly, man. Like, so Dirty Joe had invited me to come with him to shoot some behind the scenes stuff when he was on set with James Balsamo.
Like Joe, the vinegar?
Balsamo vinegar. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Joe Castro was there doing special effects. Matt just got it.
No, I can't believe you guys actually know the brands of vinegar and shit. Like, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, it's the only one they serve me at the restaurant inside of the oil that I dip my bread in and then rub on my face.
That shit's bomb.
I guess, man. I guess I never really look at the labels on those things.
There's a restaurant that does it so good that I would bathe in it. It's so fucking bomb. And I'm like, I'm not a fan of that stuff.
Vinegar? I
no, the balsamic
vinegar.
Vinaigrette. Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Your Italian roots are rolling in their grave, Matt.
No, it's not that. It's look, you know, my mom would use it for everything.
Okay.
She swore up and down it would keep ants away and stuff like that. So you work in the kitchen and it fucking smells like vinegar. It smells like you just dyed Easter eggs all day, every day. And I'm all like, it's just too much, man.
It really is a miracle stuff, though. I mean, it takes care of your clothes. It works.
Yeah, but then you end up smelling like that all the time. I don't mind the smell. It, like on my food, it's fine. Hey, it gets old real fast.
Hey, Summer's Eve isn't as bad as some of those nasty stinks. Anyways,
I haven't been douching lately. So.
Speaking of douches,
what about me?
It's good to see you back, man.
Oh my god. Yeah, so the Joe Castro thing, that was dope. And then I know we got a couple of episodes in the chamber, so that's going to be dope. This will come out weeks after all that shit has been posted or whatever. So sorry if the timeline seems all fucked up, but it is what it is. And then in the meantime, we did some cool shit too, right? We met with Evil Death's podcast, and we did, what was that movie?
The Kindred.
Yeah, man.
That shit was awesome.
Dude, it was. And those guys were awesome, and I feel bad. That hearing the final product, my audio was all fucked up. But Josh was saying that that's how it was coming through originally. So he didn't want to just ruin the flow. So like,
Yeah, I saw it live and I was like, oh, well, like there's nothing you could do at that point.
It is what it is. But yeah. So if you don't already listen, go check out the Evil Deaths podcast, another horror movie podcast. They were doing this cool shit where like every week for the month of May, they did Mystery May. So you didn't know what what movie it was until you actually listened to the episode. And then after they posted the episode, they would advertise it on Instagram. I mean, they were doing this thing where like they were doing a close-up of the movie poster. So you couldn't absolutely tell what it was. And you'd have to try to guess in what it was. So they had some cool ones. But The Kindred was pretty dope. Matt, if you've never heard of that movie, go look it up because...
You won't find it on YouTube.
Dude, but. That was like sleeper for sure, man. That shit was absolutely. So good. Yeah.
I had a chance last weekend, actually, when I was down in Ontario to stop by a little spot that I found called Nightmare on B Street. I was talking with this dude, Chris, the owner's son, and he was kind of like letting me see what was up at their shop. Cool little spot. If you get a chance to stop by, they got some collectibles, VHS, DVD.
That's cool. We're in Ontario. Yeah.
It's like right downtown, man, like right off of B Street, hence Nightmare on B Street.
Got it. Nice, dude.
Right. Is that where the old Trader Joe's was and shit?
It's like right there off of Euclid and like I said, B Street. So it's directly across the street from that old candy spot that's been there forever. What's it called, though? Oh, I should plug the candy spot name because it's been there for like 150 years. And they give me free candy when I walk in, so.
And if they hear this podcast, free candy for life.
Fuck yeah. Sponsored by the 150-year-old candy store. Their names escape us at the moment, but go check them out. They're dope.
This gum tastes like it's from 1980. But
it's so- Logan's Candies.
There you go. Matt, you were off exploring mountains while we did the Grabbers episode. But the thing that you missed before that, which... I don't know. Riverside fucked up our recording. We're going to try to fix it. But I went to Frankenson's a couple weeks ago and there's a dude that sells trading cards. And so I always buy a pack of Yo MTV Rap trading cards from him. They're $5 a pack.
God damn.
They're from 91. I've got some kick-ass ones. I got some Vanilla Ice. I've got some Ed Lover and Dr. Dre. I've got some Kool Moe Dee. I've got all kinds of shit.
Slick Rick.
I was looking around his booth. And I came across these Fright Flicks. I don't know if you've ever seen these, but
I think I've seen those in a Fangoria magazine, but okay. That's the first time I've seen them up close.
Well, the fucking pack was $8. So I was like, this one was the cheapest. The other ones were 10. And I was like, hey, why is this one 8 and this one 10? He's like, because I raised the prices, but forgot to change the price on that one. I was like, well, I'll take it for 8 then. Cool. But it's awesome because the cards have like, they have like scenes from different movies, right? That's Ghostbusters. This one is from Alien. To Matt's point earlier, this is making for great radio because nobody could see this. Vengeance. There's some
that's pretty dope.
American Werewolf in London. But here's the thing: this pack is from 1985, and the first thing the dude told me when I bought it was, "Don't eat the gum."
It's so powdery and delicious, though, when it's nice vintage like that.
It probably just dissolves into dust.
It does. It's like eating Pez.
If I was going to eat it, I would probably have to like suck on it for a while. You know what I mean? Which I'm no stranger to. You know, I like to suck on things for, you know, a little bit of a time.
You got to lick it before you stick it.
You got to lick it before you stick it.
Nice.
Anyways, yeah, old gum. That was a long way for that one. My bad.
That's cool though. I've never seen those. I definitely want to check that out when I get a chance.
Not for $8 a pack, bro. Like 10, I should say. $10.
There's got to be a better way.
I'm sure you can buy some on like eBay or something. You know, get a bulk discount or something. But yeah, dude, that's too much. Okay, today we're gonna get into a film. But before we get into the film, I want to give Matt the opportunity to speak to the producer of the film. So I don't want to take away from what you got prepared, Matt. So I'm gonna shift that over to you.
Yeah, I'll just make it brief. I was gonna make an intro to this one because we lost somebody big in the industry. And by big, meaning not so big, but had his fingers tied into a lot that, that, you know, like it's just, he really did kind of pave a certain path. And the reason why, I kind of wanted to we'll talk about this because, well, for one, we lost him. His name is Roger Corman. And he was the start of New World Pictures. And he basically set his career on the B-rated ripoff path. I when I say ripoffs, he not only ripped off a bunch of films and stuff like that intentionally, but even some of the movies that were big budget Hollywood had actually used material that he was able to provide them. Like for example, if it wasn't for the movie Dark Star, Alien would have never been made. Right. You got movies like Terror, the one with Robert Englund, Planet Terror. No, not Planet Terror. Sorry, totally wrong movie. You had talked about it. We were talking about doing it on the podcast.
Fuck, dude, my old man brain is kicking in. But keep going.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, he kind of paved the path of a lot of these. Like, when Jurassic Park came out, he made his own dinosaur movie, Carnosaur. He basically, you know, started a unique kind of, he was the first one to do a Fantastic Four movie that didn't see the light of day. Spent too much money on the Thing's costume. And that was like the entire budget of the movie, so I guess it was like so bad. But you know what? Trial and error. This guy did everything, tried everything, whether it worked or not. It didn't seem to change his career path in any way, and he still rose to the top. He's still. I mean, I was looking into his career. He by the end of it, dude. I mean, this guy's. He's involved with nearly 100 movies a year, almost all of his career. So I mean, the guy is just tied in. He's an amazing guy. So definitely will be missed.
I think that math checks out because I was watching. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Keep going.
No, go on.
When I saw that he passed, I watched the Joe Bob Briggs Drive-In Jamboree from October. That was out in Vegas, and they did a tribute to Roger Corman, which I didn't realize was happening at the time because Sean Heights was out there for that same thing because they were showing Cannibal Comedian. They got a hubby for it, but I didn't realize they were doing the Roger Corman thing. So I watched that on Joe Bob's show, and they said somewhere around 700 movies, but he's been doing it for 70 years. So it's like, 10 movies a year, I guess, or I don't know. The dude is just fucking done everything, man. It's crazy.
Right. I mean, he's just all over the place and stuff. He is notorious, and he still holds the record for, I think, fastest movie shoot ever, too. And if you guys aren't familiar, before Frank Oz's version of Little Shop of Horrors, which had Rick Moranis and Bill Murray and a whole group of people in there. I just, their names are fucking eluding me. Before Frank Oz's version of that, he originally made Little Shop of Horrors, which actually starred Jack Nicholson in it.
I think it was his Jack Nicholson's first role.
It might have been because he was fucking young. He was the same role Bill Murray was in Frank Oz's version, the sadomasochist guy that wanted to go see the dentist just to feel pain and shit. Yeah. And so basically, I thought it was funny because a friend of his had the flower shop for a movie that he had just did. And he told Roger Corman, you know, I still have this flower shop for like 2 days. If you think you can shoot something in it, you know, go for it. He's all like, well, I'll fucking do it right now. Without a single plan, without anything, he went and shot the movie. A day and a half, that shit was wrapped up.
Nice.
And you have the original Little Shop of Horrors, which I actually rewatched. It wasn't bad at all and stuff. The effects were dated.
You know who else is in that
movie? Dick Miller was in it.
Dick Miller's in that movie, right? Okay, so
yeah, Dick Miller. Yeah, he's eating the fucking flowers in the flower shop. He goes in there, buys flowers to eat them.
Do you know what Dick Miller's first movie was?
No.
It was Bucket of Blood.
Huh. And no,
you know,
shit.
You know who did Bucket of Blood?
No.
Roger Corman.
God damn it.
He gave Dick Miller his start. Gave a lot of people his their starts, dude. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. James Cameron, I think, came off of his the wave of Roger Corman.
So did Martin Scorsese. Like, yeah. There's, I mean, to say that his impact on horror, yet alone movie industry, is like was second to none is understatement by all means.
Right, and this is a guy that will forever be trapped in movie history. So I like to celebrate the guy and stuff. So that's what this was about. And I had noticed something about this movie. When we were figuring out what we were doing today, I realized, well, this really isn't a Roger Corman film, right? But but his people were tied to it. And the reason why it still kind of works is because of this. I wanted to put this out there. Is that even though this wasn't Roger Corman's movie, it was built in the spotlight of Roger Corman's films. And it was actually, he was the executive producer uncredited for this movie, which kind of shows what kind of person he was. Because there's very little people who would do something like that, right? Fund your movie to its fullest and have no credit on it whatsoever. It takes a very rare person to not want to put their name attached to it. He thought this movie had so much potential that he was willing to put everything he had into it as far as giving it the budget it needed.
And the boobs it needed.
That's kind of to my point.
It's not a Roger Corman movie without the tits.
I think that's what makes it Roger Corman, actually.
And goddamn, were they nice tits.
This movie... is this movie because of Roger Corman? It was meant to be something completely different until Roger Corman was like, we need more of this, less of that. And then now it's a Roger Corman film. So without further delay, Matt, why don't we tell everybody at home what movie we're talking about? Intro us in, bro.
Night. The monsters are running amok and we run for that theater where the marquee now reads.
They're coming. Monster humanoids from the deep.
I mean humanoids of the deep.
A tidal wave of rampaging creatures surges from the dark and violent sea to conquer the earth.
Maybe intelligent enough to perceive man as a competitor.
Why the girls?
It's my theory that these creatures are driven to mate with man now, in order to further develop their incredible evolution.
It's enough to scare the hell out of me.
Soon the world will awake to a terrifying riptide of humanoids from the deep.
We think we know where these things come from, but we have no idea how many there are.
The Earth plunges into a battle for the survival of the fittest, where man is the endangered species and woman the ultimate prize. Anywhere you run, any place you hide, any time you stop, they will find you. Doug McClure, Anne Turkell, Vic Morrow. Humanoids from the Deep.
The other title of it.
Yeah.
This was kind of like that movie we did, Mutilator.
Yeah.
Fall Break.
Fall Break.
I love that jam, dude.
I don't know what happened there. Like, the title card says really big lettering, Monster. But in parentheses, it says Humanoids of the Deep.
Interesting, because the version I'm watching has the title card as Humanoids from the Deep, But in the end, the end title card says monster.
It's weird. I guess that's they cool. had an intention that they're supposed to be called, which I like Humanoids of the Deep a lot better.
Well, in Europe and Japan, it was released as Monster. Everywhere else was Human.
So generic. I mean, like, honestly, nobody should ever have that as their title, even if it's a monster movie. There's that movie called The Monster, okay? And I get that. That's still identifying a certain monster.
Yeah, when I think of the movie Monster, I think of that movie with what's her name in it, that like with her makeup all done up and she looks all fucked up.
Charlize Theron.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think of that movie as Monster.
But even outside of just the monster title, the original, like, they shot this film under a different name called Beneath the Deep, I think it was. Or Beneath the Darkness. Beneath the Darkness is what it was. And that was supposed to be the original title for this film, but it wasn't until after Corman got his booby hands all over the movie that they ended up changing it to Humanoids from the Deep, which...
Bless his heart. Some people would say may he take the image of those thousands of titties he put in his movies, take it with him to reach the other side.
All right. Somebody give us a synopsis, because I suck at that shit.
Sure, I got you guys. Basically, it's a small fishing village is slowly experiencing some phenomena that's unexplained, and quickly body count starts piling up. And that's where we're at. Like, what
that was good
is going on.
That was good. I like that.
Would you say
didn't give away too much info?
The phenomena is funky.
Ooh, something like a phenomenon.
I was thinking more like funk phenomenon. Whatever. I need to stop making that joke. I don't know why.
I was just thinking of the Funky Bunch when you said that shit.
Got it.
Mark Wahlberg.
Okay. So this movie takes place in a real life area called Noyo, California.
That's right.
Which I was like, is that short for not your? Yeah, Noyo. Noyo, California.
Know your business.
Yeah, you know,
they sell Froyo next door, yo. Because we got Noyo.
Noyo Froyo. I like it. Anyways, it's a, like you said, Alan, it's a small, like, little fishing village. And you know what's funny is, like, the opening scene is, like, just, you know, B-roll of, like, the town and, you know, cars driving around and the docks. And, like, I couldn't help but feel reminded of
Jaws.
Well, yes, but the Goonies more. That opening scene.
Mm. I can see that.
Yeah, holy shit.
There was it's the difference between what? Washington coastline versus Northern California coastline?
Is it Washington or Oregon?
It's Oregon.
Oregon. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're not too far
even
off.
Even closer, right? Because Oregon's in between. Right?
Yep.
I'm not a map guy, but I think that's right.
Feels a lot like the beginning of Jaws / Grabbers.
Yeah, because it starts off kind of in the water, right? So, like, in the beginning of this one, we see this truck pull up, and these couple guys walk out. We're introduced to our main character. I'm going to call the old man. I forget his name. I think it's Steve or something, but he's just wearing...
The guy with the perm?
Jim Hill and his wife Carol.
Is it Jim?
Was he the dude? He's got the life preserver on, right?
They call it life
preserver from Back to the Future. It's one of those puffy vests and stuff.
He looked like Shooter McGavin from
fucking Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore.
Okay, I didn't even think about that. Right? As I was watching this movie, I was like, in my mind, I was calling this guy the Dork, right? Because in Back to the Future, they're like, Dork thinks he's gonna drown.
Dude, that's perfect, man.
Right?
Perfect.
Okay. So for Jim, I didn't even put together the fact that he looked like Shooter McGavin. Like, that's 100% dead on.
Anyways, Paul, carry on.
Okay, so the Dork shows up, to the dock. And so they're immediately talking about how, like, there's no salmon in the water and, you know, nobody's catching. And then at the same time, we're introduced to Johnny Eagle. That name is so badass. I'm not even going to give him a nickname.
It really is the cool fucking name.
Yeah.
If you didn't guess, he's Native American. Wait, quick. If you were to have Native American names, do you guys ever think about this? Like, what would you call yourself?
Oh, shit.
No, but we'll have to circle back on that one.
yeah, I need to think about that.
I always thought this would be a cool name. Kicking Ass.
Ah, oh, nice. God damn it. That's like a How I Met Your Mother. I don't know if you guys ever watch How I Met Your Mother, but the Barney character played by Neil Patrick Harris. So I think when he was talking about somebody having kids, he was like, you should use the middle name, wait for it. And they're like, what is it? They're like, no, that's it. So it's like, you know, Matthew, wait for it. Vittorino. Sorry, I don't know if you want me putting your name out there like that, but
I don't care, man.
So we got the dork, we got Johnny Eagle, and then we meet the antagonist of the movie, right? And I don't remember this dude's name either. But
he's the dude with the perm.
Yes. And hopefully I blow your mind just the same way you did mine when I tell you that this guy reminded me of Tim Robbins' character in Anchorman. He was the public news channel announcer. And he just showed up with like the Sherlock pipe, you know?
And he was wearing the turtleneck too, wasn't he?
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God damn it. Yeah, you're right. Holy shit. God bless Tim Robbins, sorry.
Okay. So they're all talking about there's no fish in the water.
Jim, there ain't no fish out there for me to pay for my gas. If you get that cannery, inside of 2 or 3 years, ain't going to be any fish at all.
Well, canneries mean progress for towns like ours. And progress means money. See, you and your people, you don't understand that. But I'll tell you one thing. You're not going to stand in our way.
That's what Custer said, Slattery.
I know. You won the battle. But we won the war.
And then, like, the antagonist guy, the NPR guy, I'm just going to call him the NPR guy, Johnny Eagle's talking shit about him. And, like, there's like, some beef between the cannery guy and Johnny Eagle. So we're establishing, you know, some beef there, if you will.
Which is weird because, like, yeah, so they're fishing and they're like, yeah, it's not biting. But then the dude's giving his speech about the cannery and he's all like, this is the best thing ever. They have like records of like the fish are growing faster and more plentiful than ever. Well, and I was like, this is some more propaganda, political bullshit here.
In a later scene at the dance or whatever.
The dance hall. Yeah,
he does talk about the scientist is like, oh yeah. But I mean, that's just all big business bullshit to make you feel better about Walmart coming in to take over, you know, mom and pop shops, you know?
So in a lot of ways is this movie has like
sponsored by Walmart.
No, thank you.
Well, I mean, in a lot of ways, this movie was kind of ahead of its time, you know, like it was essentially corporate takeover before corporate takeover was a thing. I mean, we're seeing it nowadays.
To your point, Matt, this actually, I think, was one of the first, if not the first movie that had genetic mutations that were taking place in the movie.
Where, oh, even before Piranha?
Yeah, they were saying that.
I think Roger Corman had never before Piranha, too.
He did.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Totally did.
You can't do it. It's like that 7 Degrees game and shit of like Kevin Bacon or whatever. Like, you can't find a single movie that doesn't trace back to him in some way.
2 Degrees to Corman. Right?
Actually, it reminds me of that South Park episode where they compare everything to The Simpsons. You know, Simpsons did it. That's going to be a thing.
Yeah, that's right. Corman did it.
I do want to talk about the opening scene because from that conversation, they pan to this fishing boat that's out in the water, and I swear to fucking God, the kid who's on that boat looks like Thurman Merman from Bad Santa.
If he was like done 10 years old earlier.
Like, yeah. And so I don't know, it's just like all kinds of like fuckery on this boat where like they're catching something, right? And they're super stoked that they're catching something and they're trying to net reel it in and they're having a hard time. And we see that it's some big ass creature down in the water, but we can't see exactly what it is. And then this fucking Thurman Merman kid is trying to put gas in the tank and then he drops the gas tank and then they end up lighting a flare because they need help. And then the fucking boat catches fire. And it was like, what the fuck just happened, dude?
It just goes to show me that whether or not it's because he was reading something, wasn't it? Like his comic book, right? So like he is just as distracted on his fucking comic book reading as my daughter is with her little fucking iPhone reading. Like, God damn it.
Yeah, dude. It doesn't change.
Some things never change.
That's exactly it. Yeah, man. Fucking kids these days, you know? God damn it. But anyways, so from here, you know, this is kind of moving on from, you know, watching this horrific explosion, which I thought was kind of awesome.
Well, we also saw the kid go into the water and the bubbles of blood.
Oh, that's right.
Come up to the surface. Right. Yeah,
the wrong kid died. So, yeah. So the kid gets, he falls off the boat before it explodes. And then he gets sucked into the water. And then, like, all this blood just comes a bubbling up.
Very Jaws feeling.
Yeah. 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 I thought it was funny how all the blood just kind of rushed up. Like, why would the blood just kind of shoot up that way or whatever? But
I thought it was cool. It felt real, actually. No, to me, I was like, yeah.
I was thinking about what Joe Castro said in our interview last week or whenever it was. And he was like, you know, blood doesn't spurt out. It doesn't fly like that. It's not real. And I agree with him. And when it drips down, it's more cinematic, but it's also fun to watch. You know, when it does do that. So, I guess it just depends on the context.
I feel like this thing would have ripped the kid apart. And then what we're seeing is that immediate introduction of blood to where there was no blood. Anyways, cool effect. May have been cheap, may have been unrealistic, but in my head, like, that's the way it would go down.
Yeah, I gotcha. So we just start to meet, you know, a few more characters. We are at Jim's house, the geek or the dork, and we're meeting his wife. He's got a kid. The sheriff is there, and they start hearing some noises, and the dog starts tripping, and then the dog leaves, right? And when the dog leaves, he's like sniffing around the yard, and it's dark outside, and you get that like dark overtone score coming in, and you know something's going to happen. And immediately I thought about Josh and Brett from Evil Deaths, because when we did their show, they were like, dude, fuck movies where dogs die, dude. And I was right. Like, I think this dog's going to die.
I was like, is this like the movie in a row where a dog died on him?
There's a lot of people that are like that about the dog deaths. You know, they can watch any death that comes to be on any movie and stuff, but when it comes to the animals, they're like, nah, fuck that shit.
Let me just say, if there's any of those...
It's like killing a baby, right? Like,
yeah.
Well, if there's any of those listeners out there today, stop now, because there are a whole lot of dogs dying around here.
So, like, the dog... we end up seeing one of the humanoids, right? It's this big, like, pod... Well, not a pod person, but, like, it almost looks like the creature from the Black Lagoon or, like, Swamp Thing. You know, got a lot of fucking...
it's a cool-looking creature. I really like it.
It was pretty dope. And we see it rip this fucking dog apart. And it was in this scene that I realized why... Something caught my attention in the opening scene with the boat when it exploded, and that's the editing. There are some very bad edit cuts in this movie. Horrible. Like, if you see the kid put the gas can on like the counter, and then the immediately it just cuts.
It fell.
Like, that's what they intended to show you, but it didn't really fall. It went from being on top to being on the floor. There's a lot of those edits. So if you see the humanoid ripping up the dog, like, you can see all the cuts of like when he's holding the real dog and nothing is happening and he's just kind of moving it around to like shredding up like a fake dog. And it's like,
let me say this,
his mouth wide open and his eyes are all here.
The version I saw did not have the dog getting mutilated.
What?
Shudder.
Yes, yeah, I watched the same one, and I remember seeing it.
Yeah, huh. That's weird.
Maybe they just edit my version.
I think maybe you took your eyes off it for a second, because it wasn't that very long. Happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got the PETA version. That's right. I can't watch Milo and Otis on my shit.
Okay. Oh, wasn't that movie wasn't bad, though, right?
Milo and Otis,
they were on an adventure.
But like 20 cats died and like 8 dogs in the film. It was in Japan. They just started throwing them in the river and we're like, let's see if we can film it while they run.
Done with that one. Okay, so the dog runs out, right? And we see this dog get torn to shreds. And then the next day they come out to feed the dog and they can't find it. So they go for a walk. And then to your point, Alan, this is where they walk on the beach and they see this dog just like laid the fuck out with all kinds of seaweed all over it. Like, it was pretty gnarly, right? But then they double down on it and they cut back to the pier and the NPR guy is, you know, the cannery guy is walking in with all, dude, they were unloading like what, like 15, 20 cases of beer onto the boat. I was like, that's all that beer and nothing but dudes. That's going to be a real good time right there, dude.
Yeah, they were absolutely piling that beer in.
But they came up on the dock and all the dogs had been slaughtered, right? All the dogs had been torn up and they showed.
Yeah, they recognized the pattern.
Well, there was only one dog that didn't die. Which dog was that? Who remembers?
It was Eagle Joe's or Eagle. What's his name?
Johnny Eagle.
Johnny Eagle. Yeah,
the Native American who he has beef with. So he immediately is like, all of our dogs are dead. But Johnny Eagle's dog is still alive, so I'm going to use my deductive reasoning and say, fuck that guy. And then we cut to another scene where some chick is in a window in like a negligee. She's like getting her hair done, you know, and she starts hearing these noises. She takes a phone call, but something's creeping around her house. And when she gets to the door, she can see through the glass that there's something out there. She can't tell what it is. And before she can make any action, her boyfriend comes around the corner. Which, to me, I was immediately like, there was something there because it was too quick for this dude to show up and for that thing to kind of walk away. So she just kind of attributes it to that was him. Right. So no big
deal. Well, right? He was like, I went to the back door and then I decided, saw the side door was open. Well, so I just snuck in.
With what
and
like, he was she wearing, was
like,
okay.
He sure did go to the back door.
Matt.
What was interesting the whole time is like they had that chick on pins and needles because like when the phone rings, she jumps. When the like the towel falls from the rack, she jumps like. They must have really been fucking with her on set, I'm imagining.
And she was wearing some kind of like sexy, like it was not pajamas, but like sexy, like kind of like
she had like his shirt on or something. Like it was a large.
I thought it was like a.
But then she was like wearing it like lingerie.
Yeah, dude. Like yeah, the red and black lace. So they leave right because they got some homies coming over, and then they all leave together, and they show up to. This, what'd you call it, Matt? Like a carnival or whatever? It was like a.
It's like a dance hall.
Dance.
Yeah, it's like a town, almost like where you would have a town meeting, but like a town dance kind of. I kind of chop it up to like, kind of like if you have a small town and you have square dancing, it's kind of like that. It seems like a community thing.
Yeah. I think what they're doing here is they're celebrating the fact that the cannery is coming into town because. They let the dude get on the mic, and this is the scene, Alan, where he's talking about how prosperous the town is going to be with the cannery moving in.
Thanks, folks. Really.
Here comes the pitch.
Now, before the fun starts, I just want to say that we at Canco are 100% behind you and your town, and we're here tonight to promise you that our cannery will be the best thing to happen here since God made the river and the ocean. And while we're at it, I'm going to make you another promise. We'll bring jobs to Noyo. And you may not believe this, but we're actually going to increase the catch.
And introduces the doctor and is like, the salmon, we're going to fucking GMOs without even saying GMOs. And we're going to double the populace and then we're going to start catching again. And we're going to make America great again. Or something to that effect. But the rest of the town is like, still not sure. But anyways.
Wait, free booze? We'll party with you.
Like Farva? Just give me two of whatever's free.
Yeah.
So while they're all partying on the inside, homegirl, and so the girl that was in the nighty and her boyfriend, they're in the back of the truck, just fucking getting down and dirty. And in the meantime, Who shows up to ruin the party?
Eagle.
Tim Robbins?
No, he's already there. He's the one who's telling the party, hey, we're gonna make this town great. Johnny Eagle shows up with his dead dog.
Yeah, Husky, yeah.
Yeah, dude.
And blaming them, right? He's just like, you know, what the fuck did you do and shit? And, you know, like, it was kind of a sad moment. Like, it was just like, man, fuck you.
It was one of more of the, like, cinematic moments of the movie, right? Like, that you can tell there was some heart in it. And I don't think we get a lot of that. Not that that's what this movie is. This movie's blood and guts and tits. And so we love it for all those reasons, but it was nice to see.
Of course we do.
Yeah. But it was nice to see like some like true heartfelt in-depth acting at that point. And I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier, where the director on this movie, there's two directors on this movie. One of them is Barbara Peters. And then the other one is Jimmy Murakami. And Barbara Peters shot most of it. And what she was saying was that this movie was supposed to be something completely different, right? It was some more, I don't want to say intellectual, but just with more substance. And it wasn't until Corman came in and said, hey, we need more ass, more tits. Corman was the reason, and maybe I'm jumping ahead, but he's the reason why the humanoids are rapey and then why it's named what it is. And so I think you see like bleed in of what this movie was supposed to be for those reasons.
Yeah. It's got Corman's maxim for sure. Kill all men, rape all women, period.
Interspecies insemination.
Now I do want to say this.
Love me some good alien loving.
I appreciate where you picked up that it was not the best of editing that was taking place in it. I, on the other hand, saw a lot of like quick takes that were being done in there, showing his hand, showing this, like just real quick snaps left and right, where I was like, wow, they did a lot of like clean, quick editing. It makes it look better than I actually thought it was. Well, the budget.
You guys are both right. I mean, for one, the edits are hard to watch and stuff, but that's kind of what makes it into a Roger Corman style film. Secondly, what you're talking about, Alan, like, you know, the quick cuts, like the hand stuff like that, the storytelling without saying anything, it's cool when people can do that, you know, like they can tell the story without almost any dialogue and stuff like that. You know who uses that a lot is Park Chan-wook.
I can see that.
Yeah, when you go back, you look at Old Boy or Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, and even Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, there's a lot of quiet time. It can go on for 30 minutes, but you know exactly what's happening just by people's actions and shit. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting.
So Eagle's there. He's starting shit. He's blaming the cannery guys for killing his dog. They take it outside. The big ass brawl that takes place and, you know, it gets broken up.
I love in middle of the fight how the dork, how he's like, I got your back, bro.
Yeah. Perla called that out too. She's like, did he call him bro? And I was like,
yeah.
Get him off my back, bro.
I rewound it a couple times just to make sure. And that's exactly what he said. So the next day, cannery dude is like spying on Johnny Eagle, right? Just to like see what's happening. And we hear Eagle talking about like, you know, bringing lawsuit against them for poaching on, you know, Native American lands and whatever. And he's just like, he's just trying to find out whatever he can. But at the same time, we are presented with homegirl who was in the black, red and black lace on the beach with her boyfriend, just sucking face, dude. Yeah, man.
Not to mention, those titties were bouncing all over the place.
Perla well, noticed.
Isn't she like a Playboy model?
She was in, I forget her name in real life, but she was a Playboy model that was in Playboy. She was like Miss December or something like that before coming on to do this movie.
Yeah.
So makes sense.
What were you going to say that Perla said though?
Oh, she was watching it with me and she was like, damn, they're just kind of all over the place, huh? And I'm like, yeah, Roger Corman.
She's like, man, she's like men in their gratuity.
I mean, he seems like, you know, young adult, God bless teenager, her. Get it where you can get it.
Yeah, true. So while that's happening, right? So Cannery dude is spying on Johnny Eagle. Miss December is making out with boyfriend on the beach. And then the dork is on his boat with his wife. They're fishing. They're trying to catch. And like, they just can't. Like, there's this big ass fucking haul that they're trying to pull in. And because it's so difficult, the wife starts taking the pictures. And so then the line breaks. They don't catch it. And they're just trying to figure out what it was in there. But they didn't get a good look at it. And it was funny because the dork is like, hey, can we see what you got in those pictures? And she was like, no, not till I develop this film. And immediately I was like, you could now, if you know, a digital camera, you could probably see that now, but
you know, yeah,
40,
I totally forgot
ago.
That you had to develop film back then.
Yeah. Just look at it. It's there. Just look at it.
Just don't expose it to any sun before you go ahead and develop it.
Okay. So, Miss December and the boyfriend run off and they're, you know, they wanted some privacy because some other girl was like perving on them. And I told Perla, I was like, see, girls can be pervs too, not just guys. But they run off and they find a little secluded spot and they're playing around, splashing in the water and, you know, just kind of fucking around with each other. And the boyfriend gets like kind of sucked into the water and it's scaring her a little bit. And when he doesn't even pop up. He's just standing there in the fucking water, like bent over. And again, that's one of those bad edits. And I'm like, whatever. I'm going to stop paying attention to the little shit. But when he comes up and turns around and we see his face, dude, half of his face is just tore off. And like, it's just so bloody. And like, I don't know, I got it queued up here. But like, I was like, dude, that is badass, man. I love that shit.
Absolutely. It looks like they just separated the cheek completely and ripped it out. Like, it's really good practical effect.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So she gets freaked out. She runs out of the water. The humanoid comes out from the water and attacks the Miss December and like ends up throwing her on the ground and like starts to rape her. And Perla's first reaction was, is it raping her? And I said, yeah, probably. And she was like, of course. Like, of course it would rape the woman and not the guy. Like, how does it even know if it's a creature? How does it know the difference between a male and a female human to rape the girl and not the guy? And I was like,
oh, humanoids have enhanced senses. Come on. They could smell it.
I guess.
This is common knowledge.
Hey, you know what? It was looking at the ass.
It's high biology.
It was coming up. It was coming up on her ass end and shit at first and shit. It just was like, all right.
It likes what it likes. So we have our first kind of attack on land that we get to see kind of full force. Anybody remember where it picks up from there?
I think then we've got the two teenagers who are camping on the beach. And like while they're camping, the boy has like his little marionette puppet or his ventriloquist puppet in the tent.
Yeah, that's how you get the girls in those days.
I think he says something like that. He's like, it works every time.
I mean, she literally like could not get her clothes off fast enough, dude.
I know. I'm like, where was one of those when I was in high school?
Well, Chuck works every time. So now the humanoids is just kind of going on a rampage, right? Just what do you think you're doing? We saw him attack Miss December, and now he's attacking these people on the beach. So now this thing is out.
Yeah, like I think what happened in the scene, the guy gets immediately killed. The girl starts the monster makes like a move to get onto the girl. She outruns him. And then, like, runs into another monster. It was like, dang it. Like, just as I got away from one, I ran into another one, throws her to the sand, and then rapes her right there.
Well, okay, yeah, that's a good point, because this is the part of the movie where I'm like, is there one of them, or is there multiple of them? Because it's a weird edit because she's running away, looking back and forth to make sure nothing's following her. And then she literally runs right into one. I'm like, if it was standing there the whole fucking time, how did you not see that while you were running up? Also, like, how the fuck did it move so fast? But then it turns out there's more than one.
Right. Then they, I think slowly after that, there's some more attacks. Not all of them are successful. And then you got like some witnesses talking about the attacks. And then they find Miss December alive. And she looks like she's just been put on ice by a sea creature, you know?
Like, yeah, 100%. Like, I'm going to save this one for later.
Yeah. Put some saran wrap on that bad boy. I'll be back.
Well, in the meantime, we see our good guys, if you will, right? Our crew of good guys, the non-cannery people, taking a little dinghy ride over to a cabin to kind of hang out for the night. And what we find is as they're getting settled is that the humanoids followed them. And we see...
onto their scent.
Yeah, probably. Or all that man-ass. They're like, mm-mm.
Sorry. Is that what you put on a sandwich? A nice thick layer of mayonnaise, some mustard, meat and cheese?
Hell no, man. Just give me the bread and the meat.
Oh, yeah.
Matt knows Coachella how I like style. It. Okay, so while they're all chilling at the cabin, what we see is the cannery people like kind of coming up on them, creeping up on them, right? And they're plotting this thing. And the next thing you fucking know, they're tossing Molotov cocktails at that fucking cabin, dude, and just blowing the shit up. Tommy, get down! Which I thought was, I was like, that's one way to get rid of the competition, you know?
I mean, weird, yeah, they just had that shit on deck.
But as they're scrambling to, like, you know, get buckets of water and, like, you know, put all this shit out, they're coming back and forth between the dock and, like, trying to get water onto the fire of the cabin. Do you remember what happens, Matt?
No, it's eluding me at this point.
They start getting attacked by the humanoids. So not only are they dealing with the fire that is this cabin, they're also trying to fight off these humanoids. And they start shooting, you know, they shoot one, they shoot another, it falls into the water, and then another one pops up. So again, reinforcing for me that there are more than one. But it still tricks me because when they finally get done with shooting all the humanoids, and they shift over to this other girl driving a truck, this girl gets attacked by a humanoid that was on the truck. And so now I'm like, okay, there has to be more than one because there's no way it could be in two places at the same time. We saw the other one die or whatever. But yeah, so now there's a grip of them and they're all over the town and it's going crazy. And again, weird with this lady in the truck, because as she was being attacked multiple times, she keeps like the calmest attitude. It was like weird, like she was freaked out and then she ran over one and then she was like, okay, and then just kept going. And I was like, I'd be a little bit more worried about the fucking underwater alien people that are attacking me in my truck while I'm driving than the look you have on your face is showing right now.
You know, as much as I could see her having that nonchalant attitude, I think that goes right along the lines where people are walking around with those damn guns, the rifles, and they're like shooting people and they're walking the street with their rifles. This is California back in the 80s. Like, someone would have said something about that. But it also looked like the same rifle that they just kind of shared. Like, I was like, that's a low budget trick right there.
That's a Roger Corman budget trick. Because it turns out they only had three suits for all of the humanoids. Yeah. Two of which weren't even done all the way. So you only had one that you could shoot like full on. And then the other two had to be shot from different angles. So it didn't look so bad.
Right.
But they pulled it off, man. They made it work. So the next day, we're all, you know, the town's kind of dealing with the fallout. Everybody's trying to figure out what's happening because shit's going crazy. Bodies are starting to come up, you know, more people are getting attacked.
Bodies hit the floor.
I was just thinking about that song as soon as he said that.
Everybody's trying to figure out what the fuck. And so, you know, they're doing some more investigative work. back at the cabin, and the dork's wife, you know, taking more pictures. She's starting to figure out that something is like alive. It might be mutating. It might be growing. Like, she's starting to figure out that, you know, there might be more to just what's happening than just some randomness. So for a while now, that's kind of all what we're dealing with, is just them trying to figure it out. But as they're like scouting locations, they end up at this cove, and this is where they get their first full encounter with a humanoid. And we get our first full top to bottom shot, full frame shot of what this humanoid looks like. So of course they get all freaked out and they start to shoot the shit out of it, right? And they kill
pew,
it.
Pew, pew, pew.
They kill it only to turn around and find out that there's another one behind them. And they kill that one and then they keep pew, going. Pew. And what pew, they, yeah, what they figured out at this point is they're all over the fucking place, and they're coming out of the water. They're coming out of the cove. Like, this is where, once they all get settled down and kill all these motherfuckers, is where they find Miss December in the seaweed, who's still alive, but like, she did a really good job of like playing half dead, half alive, kind of cocooned, if you will.
And kudos to her for just be willing to let them put that disgusting shit on her body while she's laying there, because that looks gross as fuck. It's like just grabbing all the shit off the beach and throwing it on top of her.
And what sucks is that they shot this shit at the end of the year, like November, December-ish.
Yeah, October, November, December.
So to be doing this on the beach, in and on the water during the fall, like, you know that shit's got to be cold as
you know
fuck,
the
dude.
Pacific's 50 fucking degrees, you know, like,
hell yeah.
Yeah, that was going through my head when they were playing in the water and they're like splashing each other like really fast. I was like, they're probably trying to just get acclimated because that shit was cold.
Yeah, I read this fun fact that the chick who took off her clothes for the dummy, she was the scene where she's running around the beach and then runs into the humanoid. They said that it was so cold that her lips were turning blue. So the makeup people had to keep like recoloring her lips just because it was like so bad.
Dang.
But kudos to her for running around naked in that cold weather, man.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did I.
Not mad at it. Okay. So now that it's all settled at the cove, they take one of the humanoids back to the lab. The dork's wife is like some kind of scientist, and she's explaining the science of, like, you know, the progression of frogs and all kinds of shit, and it's all scientific-y.
But the angle of the dangle is directly proportionate to the heat of the beat.
These are tadpoles in the larval stage. Normally, tadpoles take 12 weeks to become adult frogs. Now we add DNA 5. Which carries genetic information that stimulates the growth hormone in frogs. With the aid of DNA 5, adulthood is reached in a matter of days.
So what's the point?
We were duplicating this process to accelerate the growth of salmon when heavy tidal surges tore apart one of our experimental tanks. 3,000 DNA-treated salmon escaped into the ocean. It's my theory that feeding on the DNA 5-treated salmon may have brought about evolution in more primitive fish, like coelacanth.
The heck is a coelacanth?
They've got this thing on the slab, and like, I don't know, one scene of it is like with its head on the side and this like ooze coming out of its mouth. And then like the other scene is like covered in all this seaweed. And I just thought it was a real good use of time and space to kind of really show us like how nasty this thing could be. But also at the same time, too, they get the pictures developed and, you know, they're taking a look at what they caught on film because they're taking some pictures at the cove. So they have a really good understanding of the fact that they are dealing with some out of this world, unseen, fucking monstrous shit. And yeah, then we cut to the fair.
Step right up, boys and girls.
It's the end scene, but it's like the last 25 minutes of the movie.
Great buildup. Great, dude. Like, I like how it was drawn out. It was a good way to that finish line. A good way to bring everyone together and victimize them all.
Kill them all. there was a part of
me. I mean, you already know it's set up for disaster and shit.
When you have
family, fun, and humanoids.
Yeah,
100%. You're fucked.
And you have everybody in the town all in the same place at the same time. You know it's about to go down. And there was a part of me where I was watching this and I was like, is this scene going on for too long? And then like some dude got his head ripped off and I was like, nope, this is fucking fantastic.
You're A-okay. Right where I need to be.
There's not much to say about this whole scene other than to like gush about it, because it's literally like 20 minutes of the humanoids attacking this fair where everybody in the town is at and just going to town, like literally, right? They're raping people, they're eating people, they're ripping their heads off, and I'm like, thank you, Roger Corman.
Woo!
Thank you.
This is where those extra shots went, that's for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't know, man, like it's hard to describe. Like you need to take the time to go and watch this movie, because the last 20 to 25 minutes is so fucking worth it, dude. It's so good.
And it really is. I thought it really was a well done movie for the production cost. Like, it was dope.
Yeah, I mean, it showed us things that you wouldn't normally see in this type of film. You know, as we brought up earlier, like that the scene with Johnny Eagle and his dog and stuff like that. You wouldn't even expect something like that from this movie. This just seems like a regular like popcorn movie and shit. But it had a lot of heart put into it, and it really paid off.
Yeah, there's a scene during the whole fair thing. There's a scene where one of the humanoids is like made its way to a house and it's watching this girl take a shower. You don't see her naked, you just see the silhouette. But you get a full frame like shot of the humanoid, and it's like just big ass fucking dome, all like seaweed out and shit, and
the raging boner. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, did I miss?
I wouldn't be surprised if it had one.
That scene in the shower is actually, funny enough, a stunt double. So the actor's like, I'm not gonna do the shower scene the way you want it. So they brought in like stunt titties again, and they went ahead and like put her in there. And then afterwards, she goes, well, I mean, at least they gave me a more well-endowed like actress to fill
in. Nice. Do you think that when they have to bring in the stunt double, they yell cut and then bring in the titties?
I like to think so. I like to think that's exactly what they're saying.
I think it's all done on the DL. Like, it's like you did such great work. Thank you so much. Go home, enjoy yourself, have a nice bath. Stunt titties. Or stunt ass, like there was in the Phantasm, right?
Stunt ass.
Bring the twins over. We need them now. Quick. Stat.
We need some fixins.
So, I don't know, man. The intensity of the fair just ramps up. It's so dope. You know, I'm watching it right now, and there's, the dude on the carousel who's just dead with, like, his half of his face scraped off, and the thing going around beating the shit out of people and ripping up there was like a radio DJ who got like his guts ripped open, and
the girl who's with the radio DJ just hanging out in the pouring rain wearing a bikini, and then the bikini gets ripped off.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, this movie had it all, man.
There was something funny that happens in this scene though, which is where they kind of bans, the cannery people and, the dork who thinks he's going to drown, his people, like the adversary, the good people, they all kind of come together and they get on their boats in the harbor and they start like pouring gasoline in the water. And I'm like, they're going to light the beach on fire. Right. And then they do, but it's just these three small pockets of fire that don't do anything. I was just like, you just made it worse for yourself. You know what I mean? Like,
because now you got to fuck with the fire to get out of there.
Yeah. So now you got to avoid these humanoids that are trying to rape and eat you. And the only way that you can, one of the only ways you can get away, you just burnt down. Like, what are you doing?
Stuff.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, if it worked, you would be talking about how awesome of an idea it was.
I mean, there's a cool like aerial shot from the beach where like you could see all the fire and stuff. And I think maybe one humanoid got burnt, maybe, but that was it.
I mean, you try.
So they finally start fighting back, right? They start beating the shit out of these humanoids. And at the same time, we are shown the house that the humanoid has been creeping at. And I don't know if it was a babysitter or what, but she was there with a kid and she hears the humanoid outside. And she's trying
to... He was like, hey, mother, want another?
Well, I mean, the dude did see what was in the shower, so, like, you can't blame him for, like, breaking in and, you know.
He smelled what the rock was cooking.
So she is trying... This thing eventually makes its way into the house, and she's fighting it off with this big-ass fucking butcher knife and just, like... It's like coming at her and she just starts like arbitrarily, like blindly just like hacking at it, and like luckily is getting it in the gut. And so like you see all these like humanoid blood and guts just kind of like pouring out. She's got all the blood all over her, almost like
Harry.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And so in the end, you know, this thing is lying on the floor, it's fucking dying or whatever, and she's just kind of sitting there like, you know, waiting for something else to happen. And what she hears is some knocking at the door, and then she runs over, opens it up, and it's her husband. It's the dork, right? In his fucking dork ass fucking vest, man.
Hey,
I mean, he wore it the whole movie.
Waiting for bad weather. Come on.
He just didn't want to drown. I get
That's
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Calvin.
Okay. So, the next morning, they go back to the fair. They're kind of checking on all the fallout. They're kind of recouping from what's happened. And so, you know, you get the sense that they're trying to rebuild. And then we pan to the hospital, right? And mm-hmm. we're checking on the little whore bag that was, you know, getting down and dirty on the beach.
Miss December.
The one, yeah, Miss December. Thank you. The one that was raped by the humanoid, right? That they found in the seaweed all cocooned. And what we see is two nurses, surgical gowns, and then we see Miss December on the bed. What's going on with her, Matt? Do you remember? You gotta remember.
She's got a pregnant belly.
Yep.
And she basically just like you would see on Alien, you get the creature coming out of her stomach and shit, and it is. What is it, Alan?
It is a humanoid, man.
She gives birth to a little baby humanoid. It's like a little one, is it?
Did she have like white contacts and shit too? Like
so her face is like sewn up a little bit. Like it, like I think it's meant to insinuate that she was like yeah, exactly.
She's been mutilated.
I didn't see that when they found her, but whatever. I get where you're going for. And then yeah,
they're in for that rough love, dude.
And then she had like those white like zombie contacts in.
Okay. That's what I
thought. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Oh, but man, talk about a direct ripoff, right?
I like to think of it as like paying homage, you know?
That's fair. That's fair. They're like, let's see here. So 10 months ago, this movie was a big hit, and this is how they ended that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
let's put it right here.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, and then roll credits, right? Then that's where you get the title card.
Monster.
It was funny.
And a little bitty humanoids.
Was it? I think that was
just the frontal title card. I don't think it was the end one.
Got it.
Clearly, there's going to be like a multiple different versions, edits, cuts of this movie out there. It's been done. It's been out there.
You're right, Matt. It did say that.
Okay.
So worth it.
No, the movie was great, man. Yeah, it was so good. It's just one of those fun ones that you can turn on and just watch. It's only like an hour and 19 minutes long, like at the most.
And I was entertained the whole time. The whole time.
I thought there some small pockets of like dryness with like the sciencey stuff and like, but I mean, you need that stuff to like for connectivity, you know?
Right. Right.
Quit talking all smart, college boy. Girl.
My bad, bro.
Bringing in that technicality GMO shit.
Hey, yeah, good movie, man.
Great pick, Matt.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the classics.
Yeah, man.
It still holds up too. For being such an old movie, it holds up really well.
I think the creatures were fucking awesome. I think that the gore was like better than average, you know what I mean? Especially the practical effects on like the cuts and the blood and the guts and all the gory stuff was done really good. And I think that's what helps, I won't say carry the movie, because I think the movie stands well enough on its own, but it just makes it that much better, in my opinion.
Nah, it was a good watch. I think I rewatched that movie like maybe 5 years ago and stuff. In fact, just us talking about that carnival scene, I think I actually want to go back and rewatch that whole scene altogether.
I was just watching it right here, man. It's great. I'm already thinking about clips and I want to pull it to post to Instagram because...
Oh, dude, you can draw so that one out because that shit was dope.
Yeah, I did.
That shit was dope.
Cool. All
right, fellas.
Well,
till the next time.
Well, yeah, you know, let me cue the music here because I can do that.
Well, before we do that, let me pour a little out for Corman.
Ah, yes.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Salute.
On that note.
All right, fellas, make sure everybody's following us on Instagram at Mutant City Horror. You can email the show mutantcityhorror@gmail.com. Yeah, make sure you follow our friends, Evil Death's podcast, VHS Doom. They've been doing some cool shit too. Yeah. We'll see you on the next one. Peace out.
See you guys.
Later.
Okay, isn't it, Sheriff?